This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us this week to discuss the people, stories, and events affecting the tri-state are WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Politics and Government Reporter Paula Christian, Race and Communities Reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer Mark Knuth, and WVXU Reporter and Digital News Editor Tana Weingartner. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Paula, Mark, and Tana, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Donald Trump's picked his running mate, and it does turn out to be Indiana Governor Mike Pence, Paula. Trump revealed that today on Twitter, and he had planned to introduce his pick at a news conference this morning in New York, but he postponed that because of the deadly attack in France last night. What is your take on Pence as Trump's running mate?
Well, he's not unexpected. I mean, he was the person everybody thought he was going to choose. But as we were talking about before the show, it would have been a little bit more exciting if out of nowhere he had picked Newt Gingrich or Chris Christie. I think there would have been a little bit more excitement attached to it than sort of the guy everyone thought he was going to pick all along.
So were you surprised at all that he didn't pick Newt Gingrich?
Well, I mean, gosh, there's so many theories, and it's so hard to predict anything with Donald Trump that if I've learned anything this year, it is just to go, you're never going to figure out what he's going to do. But Pence is very conservative. He certainly appeals to that Tea Party Republican base that Trump has been having difficulty winning over. And so there are some advantages, and hopefully Pence will perhaps open up some donors who have been holding back from giving money to Trump.
Holding back because they think Trump's not conservative enough?
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
So do you think that this was the safe choice for Trump to make?
Oh, it just depends how you look at it. I mean, Pence is certainly not going to overshadow Trump. I mean, Trump will get all of the attention, which perhaps that's what he wanted, whereas he'd have to share the limelight a little bit more with Gingrich and Christie. I don't know if Pence will be the attack dog that Trump was looking for, but he certainly brings this social conservative agenda to the ticket that Trump did not have on his own.
Mm-hmm. You think the social conservative side might hinder Pence and hinder Trump to some extent? Or
I don't know. I mean, Trump is not polling well with women anyways, so I don't imagine choosing Pence is going to lose him any votes. I don't think he's polling well with the gay, lesbian, transgender community either. So, I mean, again, those were no votes lost. I just don't know.
Yeah, and the gay, lesbian, transgender community, because of the Religious Freedom Act in Indiana, there was a lot of controversy over that.
Yes, and there was the boycott of the state over that. And then Pence ended up backtracking and putting in a new part of the law that gave some protections to the LGBT community. So he kind of looked like he was flip-flopping to his base a little bit there as well. But that certainly got the attention of that community, as well as his strict abortion law got the attention of women.
Mark, what are your thoughts on Pence as Trump's running mate?
Not really sure. I don't know. Earlier on, there was talk of Ben Carson, which clearly would have potentially helped with his lack of popularity with African-American voters, which I think is the latest poll I saw was, 3 out of 4 African-American voters strongly dislike Trump. So it's clear there probably wasn't – he probably could have gained potentially a little bit if he had chosen Carson or, someone besides another white male.
Does this help him in the Midwest, though, Paula? Because he's had this spat going on with Governor Kasich. I mean, Governor Kasich has turned this cold shoulder to him numerous times. Do you think this helps Trump to have the governor of a neighboring Midwestern state? Does that help him in the Midwest and in Ohio?
I really don't know. I mean, Indiana is not Ohio. And Ohio, I don't know if Trump is snubbing Ohio or Ohio is snubbing Trump, but he doesn't have, there are no speakers from Ohio that are set to speak at the RNC next week. We have Governor Kasich, who won't be at the RNC and is, in fact, going to speak at the NAACP, which Trump declined the invitation. So Indiana is more conservative than Ohio. So I don't know the answer to that question.
So it's tough to say whether he's going to resonate with the Ohio and some of the other Midwestern
states.
Yes,
Ohio is going to really be a toss-up for Trump. I feel as if he's polling very evenly here. And, you know, there's a lot of Ohioans that really still wanted Kasich to win the nomination.
But is Ohio, can I jump in here? Is Ohio kind of the Ohio Republicans, are they more of a fall in line group, though? Like, will they, you know, if their leaders say this is how it is, you need to fall in line and be there? Or are they, do you think they'll stay?
I think they are trudging to the RNC. I mean, they are not skipping, jumping, going easily, happily. They are trudging. You know, a lot of what I'm hearing from Republicans here is he's our nominee, we'll support him because look at the alternative. So it's this sort of anti-Hillary vote instead of pro-Trump vote. So that's sort of the rhetoric that I'm hearing.
Does a Pence choice help with others who had, you know, said, oh, you know, I have to stay home and cut my grass? I forget which
I think it really does. I do, because at least they can think there's somebody, some establishment part of this ticket. There's some part of this ticket that resonates with me, with my party, with my beliefs. Because there are some in the Republican Party here locally that deep down doubt whether Trump is really a diehard Republican to begin with. And having Pence, like, there's no question.
Trump, meantime, you mentioned he's not attending the NAACP convention. What were his, what reasons did he give for not attending?
It's purely scheduling, that the RNC was overlapping, so that was the only reason that was given, which sort of fell flat to the NAACP leadership, and a lot of the African-American leaders were offended by that.
Yeah, historically, the party in the election year, the Republican and Democratic nominees, presumptive or nominees themselves, show up when the convention was last here in 2008. The NAACP, both John McCain and Barack Obama appeared, and I believe in 12, Romney and Obama both spoke. So it's historically almost a given that the major party candidates will show up and speak to the NAACP.
Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, though, I take it she is scheduled, right, Tana?
Yep, she will be there on Monday morning, I believe. So
Monday at 11.
She's coming, yes. That's 11:30, I think, is the speech time.
So Mike Pence is the pick, and I guess we'll wait and see who Hillary picks for her running mate.
Mm-hmm.
That should be very interesting. You think the choice of Pence might influence who she rolls out as her running mate?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, he is certainly appealing to part of the Republican establishment he's not able to capture on his own. And the people that Hillary Clinton are vetting do appeal to this sort of Bernie Sanders progressive element of the party that she's not doing well with either. So I think both of them are trying to reach voters that aren't super excited with them anyways by choosing a VP pick that will bring them in. Another interesting thing to watch for is if perhaps Trump makes a last-minute concession to the NAACP and sends his VP pick to speak instead. Now, that's just purely rumor at this point. Some of the politicos are saying, well, maybe he would do that. Maybe that would sort of extend an olive branch to the NAACP, and then at the same time, he wouldn't have to do it himself.
Mark, do you think he would do that?
I don't think it would be very well received.
Oh.
I think it would be, I think the insult has been made, and I think that wouldn't, you know, that may appease some people, the sense I would get, but I still think the fact that he's not coming, that there's not much other than if he had a last minute reconsideration and showed up Monday or something, I think the insult's already been slapped down.
We will continue our conversation about weekly news affecting the tri-state area, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us this week to discuss the stories and events affecting the tri-state are WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Politics and Government reporter Paula Christian, Race and Communities reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer Mark Kernute, and WVXU reporter and digital news editor Tana Weingartner. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, Mark, Alton Sterling shot to death by police in Baton Rouge. Philando Castile shot and killed by police in Minnesota. Then you had the shooting deaths of the five Dallas police officers. In light of all these events, the Inquirer held a panel discussion on local police community relations that was last night. And what was the atmosphere at that panel like? What was the what happened?
We were able, I think those three events that you mentioned that happened outside of the city, coupled with the overwhelming success of the Black Lives Matter March Sunday afternoon, where, you know, estimates ranged from 1,500 to 5,000 participants, probably was somewhere on the high end of that. We felt that the time was right, and we put this together in 3 days. And we were able to secure Mayor Cranley, Police Chief Isaac, Reverend Lynch, Damon Lynch III, as well as Ashley Harrington from Black Lives Matter, and a couple other panelists. And we had about 500 people attend. And we did everything we could to keep it pretty well ordered and prevent people from commandeering the microphone for 5 or 10 minutes. So we had questions submitted both online and in writing at the door, and we had over 350 questions posed for the panel. And we were able to get to about 10 of those last night. We'll be following up with some of those. But the atmosphere, and I was at a similar event, it was more youth-oriented on Monday night at the same church at New Prospect Baptist Church in Roselawn. And the same type of raw emotion, raw energy was evident both Monday night and last night, where it's really when the discussion begins to happen in earnest, it's akin to pulling back a scab. And there's an awful lot of pain, anger, frustration among people in the Black community with policing. And the thing that you become aware of with cell phone video and the immediacy of the internet and social media is that even though some of these shootings happen in other cities far away, frankly, they feel very local. And people react very strongly. I'm not saying that the reaction to some of those other events last week was as strong as what happened a year ago with Samuel DuBose in Mount Auburn. But the accumulative effect of this shooting in Baton Rouge and, you know, Tamir Rice in Cleveland and Michael Brown in Ferguson, and we could go on and on and on, do have an accumulative effect on the local community to the point that's what even Reverend Lynch III mentioned last night, is that, they may happen elsewhere, but we feel them.
So do you get a sense at an event like this, and as you do reporting on this story, do you get a sense of how big the gulf of mistrust is between African-Americans and the police?
Yeah, and I think one of the things, Mark, that's important to try to understand is the African-American community, while that's an important term, or Black community that we in the media use, there is a significant amount of diversity of opinion within the Black community. People who, I think, and to that point, then I think there's varying degrees of distrust, and I do think there is a gulf. But there's really not a singular collective opinion. Although I think when you have, and I forget the gentleman's name, the senator from South Carolina, the African American senator who spoke this week.
Oh, who said he'd been pulled over seven times by
over,
police
yeah.
in the Capitol.
When you see a high-level professional Black man speak to some of the same treatment that, say, you would hear from again, and there's dignity in all work, but a man driving home from a factory, mm-hmm. or a teenage, a young black man in his 20s who have similar experiences, so that resonates too. So it doesn't matter if you're a senator and you've done everything right and you're extremely well educated and hold a very respected position in the country, or you're a guy driving down Reading Road. There's a lot of anger and frustration, and I do think, with the immediacy of social media, it is this giant accumulative effect that the anger that people feel for what they saw in St. Paul is felt here locally and directed at the Cincinnati Police Department.
Now, you were talking about you had 350 questions total and only had time to get to 10 of the questions. What were some of the key questions that people had at this event?
There were some that were dynamic and simple, but very well thought out. One that sticks with me off the top of my head is, and it was directed to the mayor, Mayor Cranley, and Police Chief Isaac, was, do you support Black Lives Matter? Mm-hmm. And they both said yes, and then explained that support, and also both expressed frustration that they've reached out to Black Lives Matter Cincinnati leadership several times to meet. And then the young woman from Black Lives Matter, Ashley Harrington, who's extremely eloquent and very focused and forceful, said, don't try to co-opt our movement. We need to see action. We need to see you meet some of our demands before we'll come talk to you, because you can say you support us verbally, but your actions speak otherwise. And she was very clear about that.
Now, you mentioned Black Lives Matter held a successful rally in Cincinnati. In what way was it successful? How did they pull that off?
I think, sadly, the events in Baton Rouge and in Minnesota with those two shootings.
And then Dallas had occurred just about a day and a half before, I think.
Correct, Thursday night. Yeah. Thursday yeah. night. And I think they had already had a one-year anniversary event planned, or we're planning an event for the Samuel DuBose death, which is Tuesday. And there is an event Tuesday night. But they took all of that, and very quickly, I was at their planning meeting a week ago last night at Peasley Neighborhood Center, and they had an overflow crowd there. So like I said, I think that speaks to that frustration and anger that people feel locally, and then even though these events happen in other states, other cities, they add on. And I think that the success was, I think you could measure it in a couple of ways. From Black Lives Matter's perspective, was the size of the event, and then the diversity of the participants. Again, while it was clearly predominantly African American constituency that showed up and marched, there were a great number of whites. There were a noticeable number of Hispanics and Muslims, and that, in speaking to Muslims, whites, Hispanics, felt a great deal of support and just frustration. And again, it's kind of an insulting question to a white person, and a couple of people shoot back, like, "Why are you asking me that?" Because it's so self-evident. All I've got to do is run down a list of names. Is kind of an answer I get when I ask a white person why they're there. But overall, and then I think the other thing that Black Lives Matter was very pleased about was it was a highly disciplined march, very well focused, very well organized, and extremely emotional and pointed without engaging the police in a negative way. The police confirmed there were no arrests, no incidents.
Now, Audrey DuBose spoke at the rally?
She did.
But what did she have to say?
A number of things, and the one that stuck with me was she talked about how that when this happens to you, you become chosen to participate in the movement. And she also had kind of a warning. And
so Sam's death thrust her into this.
Brought her in, yeah. Exactly. And it happens to others. And she also said, kind of a rallying cry is, you can't wait for it to happen to one of your loved ones before you get involved. You need to get involved even before you have to face the trial and the tribulations and the agony that I've had. Hmm.
Do you know, and you might not know the answer to this question, but will Black Lives Matter have any role at the NAACP convention?
There, I interviewed Cornell Brooks, the president of the National NAACP, who talks about the necessity of multiple organizations working together. I don't know if they're, you know, going down the schedule, there's no formal recognition or formal event. But at that Thursday night meeting last week when they were planning the Sunday march, one of the executive panel or executive committee members from the NAACP did show up and speak and said to Black Lives Matter, we have legal representation if you need those types of things, that we have assets and resources that we can partner and help. And I know that I don't have it on the record, but I think there's been conversations between the local Cincinnati NAACP and the Black Lives Matter leadership that, and I will say this about the local Black Lives Matter leadership, you know, agree or disagree with them, it's a very disciplined organization. It is very well thought out, very well researched, and extremely well focused, in my opinion.
Well, and they did a great deal of planning before the rally, too, as I understand it, to make sure they had all their bases covered for that.
Yeah, they had some law school graduates whom I know who have been involved who were legal observers. They had marshals in yellow vests to keep people where they wanted them and keep them, you know, from going other places. They also had, they had given the numbers of two attorneys who were on call, who were available if someone should be arrested. And they also had instructions before they started marching from in front of District 1 headquarters that if you see the police begin to pull someone or arrest someone, that you are to lock arms with them and not let them get pulled away. So there was a great deal of both, you know, mechanical planning, go here, do this, do that, but also then instruction for participants to, you know, again, and there was a great deal of emphasis on discipline and order and focus.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. William in Clifton has a comment about the earlier Mike Pence discussion. William, go ahead.
Yes. Well, it relates to the coverage of Hillary's complete exoneration. And, of course, that was presented in the press as some kind of a vindication or cause for her to really be in trouble now, because he mentioned that it was extremely careless, which, of course, if that was extremely careless, then what about the millions of other emails that all the other office holders have done, have used in the same way? Just that's for the Hillary coverage, not for the Mike Pence. This guy has a history of really bizarre statements and actions since he's been in the governorship, just as the other Republican governors that got into office. You'll see really bizarre things happening in all the states, similar to what's going on in Kentucky right now. You'll see a real battle similar to the last Republican governor down there.
Okay. William, let's see if Paula has any thoughts on what you're saying here. So thank you.
Well, I was just curious, listening to him, what his party, which candidate he supported, because he seemed to be critical of both sides. So I was just curious who he preferred.
Perhaps, I don't know if William's still there or not. So William? Okay, he's not. Could be third party. I mean, there is so much dissatisfaction this year over the two major party candidates that...
there is. I mean, they are most likely the least liked presidential ticket on both sides that has ever existed in recent memory. They're not popular with voters across the board. You know, the interesting thing about the Hillary email scandal is I think that it has left her slightly damaged this week. I think that it is weighing her campaign down a little bit. But I am a little surprised that Trump didn't attack it harder. I think he could have really used it to his advantage a little bit more than he did. So it's just interesting to see sort of the fallout from all of this.
Well, it's kind of funny, too, because I think initially when Comey came out and released his decision that she wouldn't face criminal charges, Trump said, I am going to go after her on this. And we haven't heard, like you're saying, haven't heard a whole lot from him since.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it shows everything that we've seen from the Trump campaign this past week or so has shown that he's running a very undisciplined campaign. They're sort of not capitalizing on things they should be. They're missing opportunities. They're not nearly as well organized as the Clinton campaign. But Trump has defied expectations in running this race his own way, and he is very successful doing things contrary to how campaigns have ever been run in the past.
Okay. Going back to the conference that the Inquirer held too, Mark, in terms of looking for answers, solutions to police-community relations, did anything come out of that conference last night? Did any ideas come out of it that people are talking about moving forward on in the future?
The major concrete news was Mayor Cranley announced that he wants to reconvene the parties that were, participated in the formation of the collaborative agreement, which was signed in 2002, obviously on the heels of the violence of 2001. And Reverend Lynch III is one of the leaders for many years of the Black United Front, which was a co-signer and a major player in the formation. Reverend Lynch, Iris Rowley, others in the community, Black United Front. And Reverend Lynch actually last night on the panel said he was very supportive of that idea of the mayors because, the conversation was, it's been 15 years. A lot has changed, dash cams, body cams. The chief said that I think the first body cams will be fitted to Cincinnati officers on August 1st. And That was very well received. There wasn't a lot that was very well received by the broad cross section of the audience, but that was, and Reverend Lynch made a very good point and pointed to Ashley Harrington from Black Lives Matter and said, listen, I'm 15 years older, I've got my perspective, and it's really important that we not only reconvene those people who were there 15 years ago, but bring in new leadership, new blood, new ideas, people who are definitely deeply in touch with the concerns of the community.
Now that Captain from Cincinnati Police, Captain Maris Harold, has left the police department to go over to UC, you're missing, she was a key player in that discussion. Do you think that lends any extra missing hole there? Not to put you on the spot, but or not?
No, I think, in fact, we had asked her to be on the panel, mm-hmm. and she had a scheduling conflict. We thought it was important to, bridge both, what's been happening with the UC Police Department and, the neighborhoods around the campus and the relationship with Cincinnati Police. But you're right. She was a major player. And, if you look at the people, Greg Baker, the former city safety director,
right, him too.
Others who are now at UC trying to get that situation under control or focus it to where it's headed in the future, clearly there is a great deal of communication between that department, the university, city government, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Mark, how much of a role do you think that the collaborative agreement has played in keeping things, in terms of police-community relations, keeping things relatively calm and relatively orderly?
It's credited for a lot. In fact, after the DuBose shooting last July 19th, I know Mayor Cranley spoke, when there was not violence, immediate violence, he spoke to the credit of the collaborative agreement and the reforms that had been put in place in how Cincinnati police work in the community. I know after Ferguson happened and the Michael Brown shooting in August of 2014, Damon Lynch III and Iris Rowley and some other members of the Cincinnati Black United Front were in Ferguson passing out copies of Cincinnati's collaborative agreement. And it was being, as those incidents happened with unarmed black men and being killed by police officers in other cities, Cincinnati, the collaborative agreement got a great deal of good good publicity and a lot of compliments. But I do think that there is that is something to hold on to. A lot of hard work was done. But again, as Reverend Lynch said last night, you know, it's clearly a document that it's not gospel. It's not the end all be all. And it surely has room to be updated, improved.
Is there any talk in terms of updating and improving it? Is there talk of that actually happening?
Well, like I said, Mayor Cranley wants to reconvene it, and
would get together all the parties that were involved originally back in 2002 and
2001, I believe. Yeah. I mean, I believe that's his goal. And in fact, he called me after the event. I was driving home, and I had filed my story from the church, and he wanted to make sure I had that in the story. And I said, you know, trust me, Mary, you committed news. It's in the story. So, you know, and I think he's sincere about it, and I do think that it's a difficult process, but I think across the board, you would look at, as many departments have from the outside, you do look at this document as being something that was very, and I don't mean this as a political term, but progressive and very hard won. And again, while it's not perfect, it has improved, in many people's perspective, the way the police department engages with the overall community.
After the shootings of the officers in Dallas, Mark, have there been signs locally, at least, that maybe police are getting more support, that people are saying, wow, you know, that shouldn't have happened, and they do deserve our backing?
You know, I think there's always a group that's very pro-police, regardless of what happens. Maybe it's a little too early to tell, but there were a couple of smaller anecdotes and conversations that occurred during the rally where several people, both white and black, expressed just like we're tired of all the conflict. And, you know, and not to sound like a cliche, but there was a sense of, we have to realize our common ground and stop all this internal fighting, this, you know, we're all Americans, you know, et cetera, type of stuff. And one of the things that deeply touched several police officers I know was an African-American woman, while everybody was rallying in front of police headquarters on Ezra Charles, took about a dozen cold bottles of water. It was a very hot, muggy day, and there were several officers lined up near the I was off to the side of the main entrance, but she took over and gave bottles of water to several police officers. And the police officers that I spoke to were deeply touched. And she expressed that, you know, we have to do better.
We will continue our weekly review of news affecting the tri-state area, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us this week to discuss the people, stories, and events affecting the tri-state are WCPO.com politics and government reporter Paula Christian, race and communities reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer Mark Kernute, and WVXU reporter and digital news editor Tana Weingartner. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. The NAACP convention we were talking about earlier, that starts this weekend in Cincinnati. And Mark, there was a quote the Inquirer had from the NAACP president and CEO Cornell Williams Brooks that I thought was just amazing. And I'm wondering if you could comment some more about this particular statement from him, that these are no ordinary times.
I don't think anybody could dispute those. You know, in Paula's world with politics and what my colleagues have been covering, I don't think any of us in our lifetimes have seen, our adult lifetimes have seen, an election season like this one. And it's only going to get more interesting as we close in on November. But I think what you know, Mr. Brooks was commenting on in the context of that came out as we were discussing the kind of the arc of a relatively close period of when the NAACP was last here in 2008, While Cincinnati was still smarting, probably feeling the after effects a little bit more of 2001.
Yeah, you're still close enough to that.
Still close.
Yeah.
That was an issue. And I know the Urban League had canceled its national convention here in the early 2000s. And,
right,
and
then coming off that boycott.
Coming off of the boycott that was led by Reverend Lynch III. But the context was the arc in the conversation with Mr. Brooks from 2008 to 2016, and clearly we're on the eve of the potential election of the first African-American president in U.S. history, and he came here, and, you know, the results of that election, you know, was really a toss-up, if I remember right, that summer between Mr. Romney and Mr. Obama. And I think what he said is that, you know, things in these last 8 years didn't go as I think civil rights leaders had hoped they would with, you know, almost this recent – and Mr. Brooks even mentioned in the 2 years he has been president of the NAACP since he came from a nonprofit civil rights group in New Jersey that you had this string of shootings, police-involved shootings of black men. And you had the in 2013, I believe it was, I think the you know, the chipping away at the Voting Rights Act in the case, the Shelby case in Alabama, and you had the expectation among civil rights leaders that the president, as an African American, that there may be more, would have been more in it in the two terms for the community, and that things, you know, economically have been slow to heal, much, much slower from the recession among African Americans this country statistically. So I think that was the context. And his really strong phrase was he really saw this as an era of Jim Crow 2.0, as well as a post-millennial civil rights movement. And speaking to your earlier question, Mark, about is there an embrace by the NAACP with Black Lives Matter, you know, most definitely. And Mr. Brooks said, you know, there is this time where we are putting together, and he said it very forcefully, a multi-generational, multi-class civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in light of all that's happened recently, Mark, do you think that this is going to be a really intense, very serious convention?
I think so. I mean, as conventions go, and there's always socialization, you know, socializing and you know, glad to see people that you haven't seen in a long time. But some of the issues, for example, the local Cincinnati branch of the NAACP, which is back on its feet after being inactive for more than a year and engaged in countersuits, lawsuits, they have brought together two resolutions that are going to go to the floor for the entire delegation to consider. One is to make public transportation a civil rights issue. And access, you know, transportation, providing access for lower income people to work centers, to job centers. And the second one, which is quite fascinating, is the call that the local Cincinnati NAACP has put together that they want the national to adopt, which is to require police departments, law enforcement departments, to have an equal number of hours of de-escalation training, conflict resolution, de-escalation training, equal to self-defense and weapons training. Mm. And that is becoming a very big issue, and has only, as you've mentioned, only gathered steam and strength and seriousness and timeliness given the events of the last 2 weeks. Mm.
So how much of a boost will the return of this national convention, how much of a boost is this going to give to the local chapter of the NAACP?
You know, I think it helps in kind of let me backtrack. The local chapter doesn't have much to do with the planning of it, of its schedule, of its topics, but it's a psychological boost, and I know that Rob Richardson Sr., the president of the local chapter, has told me, as has Jerome Bowles, who's the president of the Northern Kentucky branch of the NAACP. Both are undertaking very aggressive membership drives. Mr. Richardson wouldn't give me hard numbers, but he said since January, when he and his administration were sworn in, that they've increased membership between 30% and 40%. And I do think that, you know, to make everything local is the community here in Greater Cincinnati, and I think with police community relations being kind of at the pinpoint of that, with economic issues, mass incarceration, a whole lot of issues that are right behind the pinpoint of police-community relations, I do see a return to increased vitality and influence for the local chapter of the NAACP.
Then we have also got the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus, which is going to be holding its conference in Cincinnati about the same time as the NAACP is in Atlanta. That's the first time they've been in Cincinnati, isn't it?
That is my understanding.
Yeah. Tell me about the OLBC. What is the organization?
The Ohio Legislative Black Caucus. It's about 13 members of the Ohio Congress out of the 132 members in the Ohio General Assembly, I believe led by Alicia Reese. She's the caucus president. And they're just going to kind of get together. It started, I guess, today and overlaps with the convention. And then they're bringing in civil rights leader Vernon Jordan to address their gathering on Sunday?
On Saturday.
Saturday.
Night.
Thank you.
One of the big priorities of their caucus is registering people to vote. That is a huge priority, not just for the caucus, but for the NAACP. They are sort of having a difficult time reaching people who feel as if my vote doesn't matter anyway, so why would I vote? Nothing has changed in my life in the last 8 years. And so what is going to motivate me to get out there and vote this year when Barack Obama is not on the ballot? Both organizations are launching massive voter registration drives. Both the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus is enlisting the help of local churches to take on a movement of registering people and re-registering people who might have been purged from voting rolls. And then also, I believe they're hosting a party tonight for young African Americans to get them registered and re-registered to vote.
I know Alicia Reese, one of the things that she's been working on is the idea of reforming the criminal justice system in the state of Ohio. So is that going to be a big focus of this particular conference, Mark, do you think?
I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to Alicia, but I recall last fall, she and several members, including State Senator Cecil Thomas, others, were at the Urban League in Avondale and made a significant, about a 2 to 2.5 hour presentation of its achievements and goals. And clearly, voting rights, maintaining early voting and not allowing that to be taken away was a priority, as was, various criminal justice reform. And I think a lot is bubbling up in the area now where a generation ago, crack cocaine and the scourge of drugs in the black community were heavily criminalized. And now where you have the opioid crisis with the heroin explosion, and there is bubbling anger among African Americans and frustration of the dual standard because heroin and opioid addiction are now being termed a disease. Yeah. So, and that's, again, I think one of the things that's haunting Hillary Clinton is in her husband's the three strikes you're out, a lot of the criminal justice reform of his first
term. It occurred in the early
90s, yeah. Correct. Three strikes you're out and these mandatory prison sentences, I think, spoke to a lot of African-American support that went to Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. And just a disdain for Hillary Clinton and a sense that Hillary Clinton, cannot automatically take our vote for granted.
That's
what are you?
Right.
What are you going to do to earn it, and that you almost yes. have to make amends for what you were part of 24 years ago.
We can probably expect a very important speech from Hillary Clinton on Monday. She is going to have to come in with some sort of dynamic, new, creative, imaginative idea to win the support at that convention. They might stand and clap for her anyways, no matter what she says, but their vote is not a given to her.
But I think there, like you were saying about in your earlier discussion about Mike Pence, that there is a there's an anti-Hillary vote among mm-hmm. Republicans, regardless of maybe their general dislike of Donald Trump mm-hmm. and the fact he's very non-traditional Republican nominee. But I do think there is an anti-Trump mm-hmm. vote, as we mentioned early, among African Americans. But I do think it is a vital policy speech for Mrs. Clinton.
They want to hear something about criminal justice reform. They want to hear something about decriminalizing misdemeanors or not taking away bail for misdemeanors so that you're not resulting in all of this mass imprisonment.
One of the areas you may see her pick up on from President Obama is in the last few months where he has commuted the sentences of of nonviolent drug offenders who were sentenced to, I mean, really looking at almost ungodly long sentences for nonviolent offenses. And that you started to, you know, he can't get to everybody. And I think that may be an area, as you said, that if she picks up on that, that would play well, I think, among African Americans.
Let's touch on another topic quickly here. It's the city council is still asking a lot of questions about the whole MSD thing. Who allegedly threatened a Columbus law firm to pay $55,000 it was owed to a subcontractor on the MSD project? And that's former council member Sam Malone. So there are a lot of questions going around about who threatened them. Did they really threaten them? And so I guess this week there were a lot of questions being thrown at city manager Harry Black. And I'm just wondering if council got any closer to getting any answers on this particular issue.
I'd say no. I don't think so. They, you know, all of the ones that were asking the questions walked out of it and said, we still have questions. We don't feel like our questions were adequately answered. So now,
this is the expertise of my colleagues, Dan Horn and Sharon Coolidge, who've done, in my opinion, magnificent work.
They have covered it extensively,
and I know they're my colleagues, and I'm supposed to say it, but also as a citizen, I appreciate the great work they've done. But I know that Sherry had a story the other day, and I can't recall which council member it was, but who wants to put the city manager under oath.
So they want to compel testimony.
They want to compel sworn testimony on this issue.
And wasn't there also a call for by some of the council members for a special investigation?
Mm-hmm. And for subpoenas as well. But I think that's unlikely. I think you need all of the council to approve that to be able to do that, which is not going to happen.
And I think the city manager's reaction in the meantime is that I wasn't threatening. That was not a threat. I wanted the issue resolved quickly. I might have been misunderstood, but what I'm aiming for is I wanted this whole payment issue resolved quickly. That's all I was trying to do.
Well, anyone who's had a conversation with Harry Black, he is a very no-nonsense, forceful man. And so he's not a touchy-feely guy. He likes to get things done. So, you know, I'm not sure if how his comments were interpreted, but you know, he does speak that way sort of on a regular basis.
So it sounds like this question is going to roll around for quite some time in City Hall. One of my favorite things I always do is talk to Tana about soccer because we have a big soccer game coming up this weekend. So what is this game, Tana, that everybody is just raving about?
English Premier League side Crystal Palace is going to play USL side FC Cincinnati at Nippert. 30,000 tickets sold as of yesterday. Capacity at Nippert is 40,000, so we're looking at a possible sellout here to watch an English Premier League side, the FA Cup runner-up, play a third division side, U.S. soccer team. They played the MLS team earlier this week, midweek match, and 12,800 people showed up, and we're looking at nearly 40,000 in Cincinnati.
Wow.
So it's a big get for Cincinnati and for FC Cincinnati.
It's a big get.
Big
and
deal.
Something for soccer fans to look forward to, and it's going to be televised too, isn't it?
If you can't get to the match, it's on Star 64.
Thank you, Tana. And thank you, Mark, and thank you, Paula.